I don't want you to feel guilty over the next couple of weeks as we talk about our relationship to money, as we think about it through the lens of our relationship to Jesus, okay? I am not interested in making you or me feel guilty. Rather, let's take a step back and look at what our relationship looks like to money. Now, money is a very emotional topic. I get that. It's a personal thing. It's an intimate thing. I grew up in a family that didn't talk about money. We didn't talk about money. Certainly didn't talk about it openly. When we did talk about money, it was kind of just here and there talking about how we didn't have any, or we didn't have much, or we didn't have enough. And so I understand that money is not an easy thing to talk about. And when we did talk about money growing up, it was just pretty much how me, Matt, was going to get some. I mean, if I wanted a thing, or I wanted to go do a thing, or I wanted to purchase a thing, then it was on me. And so I've had a job since I was 11, doing paper routes and working at restaurants and doing whatever, because that was just part of my story and my relationship to money. I wanted it. I had to go get it. And so I get that it's an emotional thing. I get that we all have different stories in ways in which we encounter and we interact with money. I don't have any scriptures this morning to be on the screen because I got a bunch that I'm going to throw at you. So if you want to take notes and you want to write them down, I would encourage you to do that. Maybe through the week you can spend some time with them. If you are, if you're like, nah, I'm just going to keep looking at Facebook or whatever, that's fine too. You don't even have to worry about that. It's not going to be up on the screen. So just so you know, if you would say, hey, you went through those scriptures really fast, I'd love to have those references, just let me know. Call me, text me, email me, whatever, right? And I'll gladly send you all the notes and things for that. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 7. The writer says, the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. That word servant in Hebrew, it translates to servant or slave or a sense of bondage. If you find yourself this morning ever having said some of these things or thinking some of these things, I'd love to get married, but just can't afford it, then you may be in bondage to money. We'd really love to start a family, or we'd love to have more kids. We'd love to have one of us staying at home with the kids, but we just can't afford it. The money just isn't there. Then you might be in bondage to money. If we could have just a little more space, a little larger house. We don't need something extravagant. We're not talking something, some huge mansion, just a little bit more space. Or, we've been renting our whole lives, and we'd love to just purchase our own home, but we just don't have the money to do it, then you might be in bondage to money. You know what? I hate my job. Now, that's not me saying that I hate my job. Though, those of you that are friends with me on Facebook, if we're not friends, let's be friends. Yesterday, I got to use a chainsaw for the first time. And, look at this beard, right? It's like a thing. There's a little gray in there, but, this beard, if I wasn't going to be this, I would give a run at a lumberjack. I discovered a new favorite power tool yesterday. Now, granted, I used it for an hour, and my arms are about to fall off even this morning as we were I'm trying to worship. I'm like, oh, God, my arm, right? Maybe you find yourself this morning in a job where you go, I hate my job. It is killing me. But I just can't afford to. You might be in bondage to money. I feel like God is calling me to do something else, something different with my life. I serve on the Board of Ordained Ministry for the Conference of Indiana for the United Methodist Church, and we had our first retreat this past Wednesday and Thursday, and we are charged with equipping and supporting and encouraging individuals who feel, and in particular, individuals who feel called into ministry in some way. You may be sitting here this morning, and God may be calling you into full-time ministry. And you might be like, God, there is no way. God, have you seen my bank account? There is no way that you can seriously be calling me to do that. Because that's just not financially, I can't. You might be in bondage to money. You might say, you know, I want to help. Man, I have so many friends, family members, people that I know who are in need, and I want to help these people in need. I want to go on these mission trips. I want to serve locally, regionally. I want to serve internationally. I want to serve around the world. I want to help. Oh, I want to sponsor kids from all over the world. But I just don't have the finances to do it. You might be in bondage to money. Did you know that the average American household has a total debt of more than $90,000? And that includes households who have zero debt. So all of us in the mix, $90,000. The average household debt with those who carry debt or who have debt, so all those people that, maybe you're there, maybe you're like, I'm one of the zero debt households, and I applaud you, and I envy you, and we're trying to get there. For the rest of us, average household debt for those who have some sort of debt is $130,000. That debt burden is costing, on average, the average household anywhere from $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 in interest a year. That's like, I don't know, 9%, 10%, 12% of the annual average income. For those who are carrying a balance, average credit card debt, $16,000. That's a lot of, I don't know, shopping on Amazon. That's a lot. I don't know what that is, right? Golf clubs, it's a heck of a lot of lattes, whatever that might be, right? A survey that was done less than a year ago showed 56% of Americans, 56% of Americans have less than $1,000 in their checking and savings combined. 56% of those of us who live in the United States of America, this survey showed, have less than $1,000 total combined in our checking and savings account. That means that there are a number of individuals in our country who are living paycheck to paycheck. And that could very well be you and me this morning. That if we don't get this paycheck on time, we find ourselves facing some decisions, potentially difficult, life-changing decisions that we have to make. And so then you might say, well then, Matt, why the heck do we have to talk about this in church? Right? If strapped is the normal, right? House payments, car payments, student loans, credit cards, sleepless, restless nights, tension in our marriage and in our relationships, because we're worrying about all this stuff. Why do we have to talk about it on Sunday mornings? Because I believe that priorities need to be talked about at church. Not just talked about, I would even suggest that our relationship with Jesus should set our priorities. And you've heard me say, and if you haven't, you'll hear me say it again right now, that I believe that our checkbooks and our calendars are the most tangible, outward, visible signs of our priorities. What we do with our money and what we do with our time are indicators not just of our priorities, but I would also say our faith. And so then all of a sudden, it becomes something that we talk about on Sunday mornings, because It involves priorities, which I believe becomes an issue of faith. Remember this guy, Jesus? Two-thirds of the parables deal with money and possessions. Two-thirds of the parables that Jesus uses to teach, two-thirds money and possessions. One out of every 10 verses in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, one out of every 10 verses deal directly with money. Throughout all of Scripture, 2,300 verses talk about money. Five times more than the verses that talk about prayer and faith. Clearly, it's a thing. And so this morning, I want to talk about a couple ways in which I think that money and things, they tempt us. The first point I would make is this, that we are tempted to serve money. Matthew chapter 6, 24. Writing those down, taking notes, looking at Facebook, whatever you're doing. Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. Jesus, in the middle of his Sermon on the Mount, says, "No one can serve two masters. Either he or she will hate the one and love the other, or he or she will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Now, it's interesting to note that Jesus specifically said money. He could have said, you can't serve God and, he could have said a lot of other things, right? You can't serve God in power. You can't serve God in popularity. You can't serve God in self. But no, God, Jesus says, you can't serve God and money. And I wonder if Jesus isn't sort of, I mean, Jesus, right? God and man. He might have a clue on some things. And so Jesus says money, because I wonder if he may not have an idea that money, possessions, things were going to be the number one competitor for our hearts. And so Jesus says, you can't serve God and money, because I know it's going to compete for your heart, which means it's going to dictate your priorities. So we are tempted to serve money. If you have ever bought something that you don't need with the money that you don't have to impress someone that you don't like, you're serving money. If you've ever gotten so much money or whatever amount of money, so little money that you have, and you hoard it and you keep it and you build the stack and you think, you know what, this is going to keep me safe, I'm going to protect this, and so you don't give it, you don't tithe it, and you think somehow you don't give to those who may be in need, you're serving money. If you're fighting to move up some level or bracket of income at the expense of your family, well, you know, I want to give my family the life that I never had. You're serving money. When I meet with couples and individuals in my office right there, do you know one of the things that I hear most often is, I would love for my spouse to be a spouse. It's really great that she makes this much, but it would also be really great if I had a wife. Or a parent to help me parent our kids. I would trade this amount of income for this amount of income and this amount of spouse and parent. I hear that more than you might think. It's great that he makes this much and he's striving to make this much, but man, I would trade for him to be present and to be a husband and a dad. If you're fighting to move up these levels of income at the expense of your family, you're serving money. And so we're tempted to serve money. One of the other things that we're tempted to do, we're tempted to love money. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10. 1 Timothy 6, Verse 10, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Not money, right? Note that Paul writes that when he's writing to Timothy. He says, money is not the evil. It is the, we can be interactive, it's okay. The what? The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with grief. Money in itself is not a bad or a good thing. Money is amoral. It is what we do with our money that determines whether it is a, or if we find ourselves in bondage to or tempted to serve money or to love money. Now, some of us might say this morning, well, you know what? I don't really have that much money, so I don't really love it. I don't have any, so I don't love it. And yet you can talk to individuals who are poor, perhaps that's you, and they talk a lot about money. They think a lot about money. Likewise, you can talk to people who have a lot of money. That doesn't mean that they love money. They might be really good at what they do and have a lot of money. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they love money. And yet one of the things that we're tempted to do is to love money. Some say, well, you know, if I had more money, I wouldn't have to work as much. When generally, if you have more money, it means that you have worked more or have to work more or have more responsibilities. Some would say, you know, if I had more money, then I would have less debt. Trends suggest otherwise. Well, but if I had more money, then I would give more. And unfortunately, there are countless, numerous studies that show that individuals with higher income give at a lower percentage. Money is one of those things that it's kind of, money serves as like the great amplifier. It makes you more of what you already are. If you are a jerk and you have more money or get more money, then you're just a rich jerk. If you are generous and you get more money, then you become even more incredibly generous. I would say it's kind of like the megaphone. When money is the megaphone by which we project who we already are. The love of money is the root. So don't love money. Fine, like it. Don't love it. Don't be tempted to love it. Don't be tempted to serve it. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10. Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his or her income. This too is meaningless. I mean, many of us, many individuals that we know are under money's power and they don't even know it. And the issue isn't how much we make, but how much we spend. We don't have an income problem. Most of us have a lifestyle problem, which then becomes a spiritual problem, and then becomes my issue to talk about with you on Sunday mornings. Not an income thing, a lifestyle thing, which is really ultimately a spiritual thing, and then we go, let's talk about it, church. Let's talk about what it looks like as we have a relationship with money and a relationship with Jesus. How do we do it? Why do we feel so strapped by money? Why do we feel like it holds us in bondage? Did you know that 95% of married couples argue regularly about money? Now it becomes my issue too. 95%. The number one cause of divorce in America is still what? Financial. Not an income thing, a lifestyle thing, which then is a spiritual thing. U.S. married couples argue on average 3 times a month about their joint finances. And maybe some of you are sitting here like, honey, we're good. Last month we only got mad at each other once, like way below average. Others of you are like, oh snap, we're at like 3 times a week. And then something happens when we hit 40 plus, right? I'm 37, I'll be 38 in January, so I guess I got a couple more years before Ty and I start to argue like way more. On average, couples that are 40 plus argue about finances 4 times a month. And I don't know if that's that, like something happens when we get, like we turn 40 and we're like, oh crap, retirement. You had another Starbucks? Or I don't know. I don't know what that looks like. But it goes up. When we think or believe that most of our problems are going to be solved if we had more money, we are under the influence of money. And what we don't really need is more money, right? If it's not an income thing, it's a lifestyle thing, it's a spiritual thing. We don't really need more money, we need more Jesus. And this morning, if you're tired of being strapped, if you hate being under the power of money, if you're tired of arguing about finances, if you're tired of being unable to do the things that you think God is calling you to do because of money, then we gotta change our perspective on money. And so I would say this is the right perspective on money. This is, it is right because I believe that it is godly. The godly perspective on money is really pretty simple. We don't serve money, we serve God. We don't serve money, we serve God. Which then means that money serves us as we serve God. We don't serve money, we serve God. Money serves us as we serve God. Well, okay, so how does money serve us? A couple of different examples or ideas. One, it buys you time. And I don't mean like it extends your life, because that's silly and not true. But that it buys you time. So if you've ever traveled somewhere for work or with your family or whatever, travel, you've gone somewhere of some significant distance and you've had the choice or the options of going, I can either drive or I can jump in a plane and fly. And you have enough money to be able to jump in the plane and fly, you have, in a sense, bought yourself time. Money serves us as we serve God. Money, one of the ways money serves us is it buys us time. So by doing that, you say, okay, it's going to take me 7, 8, 15, 20 hours to drive to this place. I jump in a plane because I can pay the money to jump in a plane, and now all of a sudden it takes me 3, 4, 7 hours to get to wherever I'm going. You now have bought yourself more time either at your destination or at home. Money serves us as we serve God. Maybe you have someone who cleans your house. Maybe you have someone who brings your groceries to your front door. Maybe you have someone who walks your dog. Maybe you have, I don't know, whatever other things that are out there that people do. Those are ways in which money serves you by buying you time. Well, now I don't have to spend 4, 6, 8 hours a week, a month, maybe for some of us a year, cleaning our house, because money is serving me to buy me time, and that's happening. Grocery shopping, I don't have to worry about it. I like click a couple boxes online, you know, before I leave work, and magically my groceries show up on my front step. Money serves us as we serve God. It serves us by buying us time. Then the question becomes, as disciples of Jesus, is what do we do with that time? One of the other things that the ways in which money can serve us as we serve God. God, what are you calling me to do now with my time? You have given me this money that I can then buy time with because someone's cleaning my house, someone's walking my dogs, somebody's doing my grocery shopping. Now I have this time. God, what would you lead me to do with this time as I serve you? Money serves us as we serve God. One of the other things that ways in which money serves us is by buying us options. An example you might think about would be vacations, right? When you think about vacations, those of us that don't have any money, we don't think about vacations. We're like, oh, it'd be great someday to go on a vacation. Wow. Others of us might be like, you know, I got a little bit of money, I could do vacation, we're going to go to grandma's house, right? That's the vacation, we're going to go to grandma's house. Others might have a little bit more and we can go, you know, where do I want to go vacation? I could go, maybe I want to go to the mountains, maybe I want to go to the beach. And you have some options there because you have a little bit more money. Maybe those of you that have a lot of money, you can go, where in the world would I like to go today? Money buys us options. We don't serve money, we serve God. Money serves us as we serve God. Money buys us options. It serves us as it buys us options. Maybe you would go, you know what, I have enough money and I tithe and now what do? I have options of ways in which I want to use my money as I give, even above and beyond how as I tithe. What do I want to do with this money? I have these options of ways in which I can serve or I can give or I can help those in need. Money serves us as we serve God. God, what would you have me do with this time that my money has allowed me to buy? God, what would you have me do with these options that your money that you have given has allowed me to have it in front of me? Romans chapter 13, verse 8. Paul writes and he says, let no debt remain outstanding. I mean, think about that for a second. Just if you can, just for fun. Maybe some of you are there, and again, props to you. Just imagine your life debt-free. I mean, I think about my own family and the debts, you know, the debt we've got, the mortgage, and we got a car and some student loans, and I think if that debt was gone, I mean, it would be a pretty significant change to our life. Man, what could we do if we didn't have any debt? Can you imagine what would your life look like if you had no debt? No student loans, no credit card, no car, no house, no debt. Your income remained where it is, and what would you do? The verse goes on. Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt, Paul writes, chapter 13, Romans, verse 8. Write it down, look it up, so you know I'm not just making it up. Except the continuing debt to love one another. Right? I mean, it's one thing for me to imagine our family's financial situation, like all of these material money debt that I have, and like, it's one thing to imagine this debt to be gone. And whoa, that'd be crazy, right? I mean, it would change things for us. At the same time, I think about that number, and I'm like, okay, we're going to chip away at it for a couple, you know, years or more, right? So there's that thing. I hear Paul on the other side say, but don't forget the debt of continuing to love one another. We just finished a message series about being free. There is a debt that I have that has been paid in full. The debt and the weight of my sin is gone. Christ has paid that debt. And I cannot repay it in any way. The only thing that I can do is strive to love one another. As Christ has, we sang a song, as Christ has loved me, let me help me to love as you have loved me. That is my repayment on that debt, right? It's one thing to be like, oh my gosh, what if all this money paper material debt? Like, what if that went away? And think about how that would impact our lives or what it would look like to live in that kind of... It's another to realize that my debt to sin is gone. I can live in that now. This is years and years and years and years and years, years and years and years away, right? This is now. My debt to sin is gone. Your debt to sin has been paid in full. Don't try to pick the balance back up. It's already been paid. It is gone. It is done. And you and I can live in that kind of debt-free right now, today. Right? I don't even have to imagine, like, someday I can go, God, you have set me free now, today. Luke chapter 12, verse 15. And then he said to them, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man or woman's life does not consist in the abundance of their stuff, of their things, of their possessions. First part of 1 Timothy chapter 6. But godliness with contentment is great gain. What would it look like if you and I could actually be content? For we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men and women into ruin. This kind of debt, we might have to work at for a while. This debt, you can know this debt being free today. You can know that Christ has set you free from the debt of your sin right now and live in that freedom. Now, this kind of freedom, maybe someday, hope and pray that someday, this freedom is yours to have right now. Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Heavenly Father, we confess to you that there are plenty of times when we have put our treasure in other places. When we have found ourselves loving and serving money. We confess that we have, and not even in any sort of unethical way or with any sort of ill intent, but that we have tried to gather up these treasures around us here on earth and have been fooled into thinking that somehow there is security, that there is stability, and that has determined our priorities. Lord, remind us that you have set us free. Remind us that you have paid our debt in full to sin, to death, to self. And help us to live in that freedom. Help us to live that debt-free life so that it might impact the way in which we manage our debt to finances and stuff. May the freedom that we find in you impact the things that we do with our money and with our time.